From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
When Google's executives feel unproductive, they have a secret weapon. They can call the company's in-house productivity expert who will come and help. This is a real job held by a real person. Her name is Laura May Martin. She started in sales at Google, and she was so efficient that she eventually moved into the office of the CEO, where she now coaches senior executives on how to manage their time.
A lot of times I'm working with someone who's already productive. Obviously, they're an executive at Google, but I'm brought in because they're maybe moving teams or they just brought in a new chief of staff and we're figuring out workflow and things like that.
And her process is super fascinating. She starts by asking executives to identify their top three priorities. What are the three most important things that they should be devoting their time to right now? Where do they need to be the most productive? And once she has that, she pulls out a printout of their calendar from the past few weeks and gives them a highlighter and asks them to circle every meeting or task that was on the calendar that was actually connected to advancing their top three priorities. Now, imagine for a moment doing this yourself, identifying your priorities, then looking back at your own calendar to see if you were actually spending time on your priorities. What do you think? Would you be spending your time wisely? For me, I'm not so sure, which is perhaps why my days always feel like they're spinning out of control and my to-do list always feels like it's growing, always adding things to it, not checking enough of them off. This is why I was so interested in Laura's new book. It's called Uptime, which reflects Laura's more holistic feelings about how we spend our time and how we should think about productivity. To her, all our time cannot be task-oriented productivity time. That is just too exhausting. There has to be an uptime and a downtime. And she wants to make you appreciate both.
Uptime in the computer world means the time that a computer is on, running, operational, working. And so when you think about your own life, I like to tell people, if you actually think about that time, however fleeting it is, when you're thinking, wow, I'm really on top of it. I'm killing it. I'm doing things. I'm feeling good. I'm thinking of new things. That's what I'm defining as uptime, the time that you're operational, on it, productive, and how to hit that zone more often is what the book is all about. And then it really goes into not only the nitty gritty, because I wanted that. I did not want a productivity book that was just high level, like delegate, take a walk from your desk when you're stressed. That's not helpful when you're in the weeds, which I certainly am with three young kids and a full-time job and all of that. So I really wanted, that's why practical is in the title, practical things to do, like you said, the list funnel. But then it also talks about downtime and how downtime sounds like the opposite of uptime, but it's actually an integral part of it. So we don't think of our best ideas in our 10th meeting of the day. We think of them on a walk. We don't think of them when we're doing email. We think of them on our commute. And so downtime is not only important to prevent burnout and for that longevity, but it's also truly a huge part of productivity. And so that's where the uptime, downtime explanation comes in. And that's the basis of the book.
Today on Problem Solvers, we're going to help you with your uptime. I'm going to have a conversation with Laura in which we delve into the very beginning steps of her process. It's really the early stages of her book, where we're talking about identifying priorities. We're talking about clearing out all the other demands on your time, the stuff that just doesn't advance you, how to do it, how to say no. And then a really interesting and helpful concept that she has called a list funnel. It is a to-do list like you've never seen before. At the end of this, you are going to be more productive. I already feel more productive. And it's all coming up right after the break. Entrepreneurs, we all love a problem solver. So did you know that Hertz Rental Car has a free membership program to help small and mid-sized businesses save whenever they hit the road? It's called Hertz Business Rewards. Sign up in minutes and save at least 20% every time you rent a car. Work trips, client meetings, industry conferences. Hertz Business Rewards has your back. And you'll save on more than just the daily rate. Members earn credits redeemable towards free rental days. It's also free to add an additional driver if any additional coworkers are coming along. And for those Gen Z entrepreneurs out there, no young renter fees. Plus, sign up for Hertz Business Rewards today and earn 3x credits during your first 90 days. Problem solved. Join for free at hertz.com/business rewards. Applies to base rate, taxes, fees, and options excluded. Additional terms and exclusions apply. Visit hertz.com/business rewards to learn more. All right, we're back. I'm talking with Google's productivity expert, Laura May Martin, author of the book Uptime. And to start, I just want to have you hear from her on the subject of priorities. Really important. And I feel like everything that she has to say and do is really oriented around that, because it's not just about what do we need to do now, but rather how can we make ourselves most effective at the things that are most important?
One thing I read, or I don't remember where I read it or heard it, but is that really successful people know how to say no to really good things, so they can say yes to really great things and do them really well. And I think that's really hard for people, especially from an entrepreneurship lens, which I actually have a ton of friends and cousins and that are entrepreneurs. And I did a lot of interviewing them for this book because I certainly did not want it to have this view of you have a corporate job. This is much easier to do these things. I really wanted that lens. But I think it's difficult to say, what am I doing that in theory sounds good and I thought of it and it's on my to-do list, but getting really strategic about intention and saying, is that moving the needle? Is that the best use of my time? Is that the thing that's going to push me forward? And just for example, I was coaching like a certain level of executives at Google, and the demand started being so high that I had to basically say, I'm only working with VPs. I had to make that cut. And it was really hard because did I have these hour slots on my calendar? Sure, I had them, but I was burnout. I wasn't thinking of the best ideas for these VPs. So by doing that, I actually came up with a scalable program for directors that's focused on the top things I was coaching on. And that was really good because I took some of the workload off. So I had to say no to that. It's just about that muscle of looking at your list of 16 hours worth of things to do and saying, what can I not do? What can I ask someone else to do? What could I pay someone to do? What could I do half as well as I want to just to get it done and do the job right? And I think that's truly a skill that comes with time and just being aware of that trade-off mindset. Anything I pick up, I'm putting something else down. So I have to make sure that whatever I'm doing is the absolute best use of my time.
And speaking of making the absolute best use of your time, I actually did two things with Laura at the same time. And I'm telling you this now so you have a little context for some of the comments that will be made later in the conversation. So I spoke to Laura for this podcast, but I did it live inside of a community that I have, which is called One Thing Better. It's part of my newsletter. You can learn more by going to onethingbetter.email. It's a lot of solopreneurs, small business owners, and people building amazing careers who want to learn from each other. And we have calls like this where we bring on experts like Laura, and I talk and then with the person, and then community members can ask questions and we make it interactive. It's a lot of fun. So you'll be hearing from Laura. You'll also be hearing some questions that I bring in from community members who are watching on Zoom. So with that said, let's now dive into Laura's process. Like I said at the beginning of this episode, when Laura starts working with a client, and therefore really the beginning of the process that she's suggesting you go through if you want to make yourself more productive and efficient and wrestle down your time management problems, then where you need to start is with priorities. And you want to pick three of them.
Obviously, we're all going to have more than three things we're focused on at any time. But it's the rock, jar, sand, pebble analogy, where if you're putting all this sand in your jar and then you say, I have these big rocks, these are the things I care about, trying to shove them in, it's already full of sand. So you had to identify these big things first so that they're constantly on your mind. And it helps with, oh, I have these three things I know are my focus. Something comes in my desk and it's asking me to join this new committee. I want to. It seems good. Oh, seems like something I would normally do, but it's not in my top three priorities. Is it really something I can fit in the jar right now? And so it just gives you that lens. And I give the example in the book of a time I was particularly overwhelmed. And my husband said, what are your top three priorities? And I listed six. That was a quick way of realizing I was trying to do way too many things. And just that one question let me believe, okay, I've got to shave down some of these things. I got to deprioritize so I can focus. And so it's just a good question to start with. And I always say, if someone stops you on the street, you should generally have those outlined. And it's not work and then personal. If you have a personal priority right now, like moving your family across the country, that becomes one of the big three. There's only one you. So there's only one set of priorities.
So the next thing that you do that you wrote in the book, which I like, the priority thing is like, oh yeah, that makes sense. But then this next part made me step back and think about this for myself, and I bet will for everybody, which is that you then have executives take those top three priorities and then look back at the past few weeks of their calendar and identify how much of the time that they have spent in the past few weeks actually matched those priorities.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that exercise.
Yeah, so I secretly print, because I think if I say, hey, here's what we're going to do, I'm going to ask your priorities, then you're going to tell me what you've been doing. It just gives them too much heads up where there might be too much thought around it. So it's that moment of, all right, let's see, because I tell people, don't tell me your priorities, show me your calendar, because where you're spending your time is your priorities, hands down, no matter what you're saying. And so by having their calendar secretly printed, it's just a good way of saying, all righty, let's put that to the test. Where are you spending your time? What are you spending your time on? And a lot of times it really does match up, which is good. And then a lot of times it can be, oh, wow, there's this thing that I spent a full day and a half on that was some side project. And that actually ended up being a lot of hours when you're looking at a 2-week period. And that's not one of my top three priorities. And so how often is that happening? And there's no exact science to it. It's not has to be this certain percentage, but it's just a good eye-opening exercise to say, where am I spending my time? And the other thing it does is it gets into the nitty-gritty of a priority, because let's say your priority is reorganizing your team. That seems super high level. But when you start looking at the calendar, you want to say, that actually looks like me meeting with my HR partner, me doing skip-level meetings with my team, me interviewing external people about how they organize a similar team. So you want to not just know what's the goal? You want to know, how does it show face on my calendar so I can recognize how my time should be spent?
I'm going to read something from your book because it's just such a great tip. And then you can expand upon it. We're just still talking about priorities. So Laura writes, one of my favorite ways to start shaving things off my list is to do a brain dump of everything floating around in my head that I believe I can or should do. Then I identify roughly a third of the things on the list that are the lowest priority. Those are usually the things that have been in my brain for a while and keep getting carried over without getting done from list to list. Then for each of those bottom third items, I ask myself, what is the worst thing that would happen if I never do this? Is there any other way for this to get done without my doing it? Is there any way for me to half do this and move on from it? This is what I loved about that, is just how incredibly liberating it is to think that things that have been on my to-do list maybe just shouldn't get done.
I think that's part of the power of finding those things that are better not done. I always give the example of my linen closet is just like a mess. And people are thinking, you're so organized, why don't you fold your towels perfectly? But I've identified that as a waste of my time. I've said, no, that's not a good use of making sure every towel looks perfectly folded. And so I'm leaving that as is. And so that's what you're doing with those bottom third. It's by flexing that muscle to say, this is not a good use of my time. I keep carrying it over, which means that it's not truly a priority. And so what does it look like if I just never do it? So it's just a mindset shift to help you let go of that. We talked about just looking at the things, the 8 hours of things you can't do. It's just a way of thinking, if it never gets done, probably fine. My business will go on.
What have you found works really well for people saying no to things? That's where you move to next in the book. Either finding good ways to decline things, finding good ways to build into your calendar the expectation that things will go wrong and that there will be emergencies you need to address. Let's move from setting the priorities to then applying the priorities in an actual busy, ever-shifting life.
So I think when you identify the priorities, then it's okay, yeah, how are these all going to fit in? So that's why I immediately went to how to say no. And later in the book, I talk actually about setting boundaries up front, which makes saying no less often and less awkward. And the example I give in the boundary setting chapter is setting from the positive versus what you don't do. So let's say you're a photographer. That's actually one of the friends I talked to a lot about this book. And she said that she sometimes feels bad because she schedules all of her Tuesday, her pictures Tuesday and Thursday so she can edit Wednesday because that's a perfect day, her kids, whatever. And then she shoots weddings on Saturday. She says not when someone emails her and says, can you do my family pictures on Saturday? She doesn't say, no, I don't do Saturday family pictures. She says, I do Tuesday, Thursday family pictures. So immediately she's shifting their mindset into what she does do. So that one, like setting those boundaries up front makes it easier for you to keep those priorities and schedules. But then if something comes around where you want to say no, some people say no is a complete sentence. That just doesn't work for me. It feels awkward. I feel like I'm a recovering say yeser. So just saying no is big for me. So then I have to do it in a way that feels good. And so in the book, I put actual sentences. And this is because of one of my emails at Google that went viral about how to say no to a meeting. Once I sent it out, people sent me, forward me emails that these little sentences I gave as examples were being used all over the company. And I loved it because people were like, I only invited this person because I thought they'd want to be invited. And now they're saying no to me, which is great because they didn't need to be there. So just removes a lot of inefficiencies. And there are examples like no, because, for example, I was asked to speak at an event on Halloween. I have 3 kids under 5. I knew I couldn't miss Halloween. So I didn't just say, no, I can't. I said, no, I have young kids, included a picture of them from Halloween last year. Immediately, I have that vulnerability. She understands. She's on my side. She'll probably ask me to speak again. Or no, but I can't speak, but here are a ton of resources that I've put together and other speakers, or not right now. I can't commit to this fully at the level that I would want to give you because of my current set of priorities. So let's check back in 3 months and we'll see if it's something I can do. So actual sentences to copy and paste, because I think that people just have a hard time of how do I say no, but also maintain that social capital and that friendliness and that approachability. And certainly as an entrepreneur, saying no, but still leaving people open to my business and setting boundaries at the same time for myself. So I think that that's just a skill, again, that people have to learn.
I love that. I do a similar thing when I'm negotiating speaking fees, which is when people are trying to get me down below the threshold by which it's worth me getting on an airplane and leaving my family and going to speak. Instead of just being like, no, I can't take, you know, can't that amount of money, I always say, look, I would love to come and do this for free because I just enjoy it and it sounds really fun. But the reality of it is that I have 2 little kids at home and my wife and I have an agreement that me traveling and creating stress for the family works when it covers a certain amount of the mortgage. And so this is the amount of money that allows this to work for my family. And I found people are always responsive to it. And and usually the number goes back up. So
exactly. Because you've shown that no, because you've said, this is my vulnerable. This is actually where I'm coming from. You're being completely honest. And no as a complete sentence would have probably lost you that and a future speaking engagement because of it. So I think that you've nailed the no, because.
Yeah. Thanks. All right, Laura, let's talk about the list funnel, because this is a complicated idea and I want to save time for it, because as I read through it and understood what you were doing, I thought, this is really smart. And then I thought, this is going to be too time consuming. And then funny enough, right afterwards, you address why it's not too time consuming. So, so explain the list funnel.
Yeah. So the list funnel came from me doing so much coaching and just realizing that people, they want a good to-do list system and it's just never that good. It's some mix of things that they know they're not going to do and things that they have to do and things that they want to do. And for example, I thought of something that I want to do in the fall when my son goes to school. And should I add that to my list today? That seems stupid because that's things that I'm actually going to do before 5. And it's this idea of separating everything you want or could do from things you'll actually do. And it helps your brain feel better about the things that you're not doing because you've chosen to not do them, but you know that they're there and they're not getting away from you. So it starts with what I call the main list. This is exactly what I literally used to do. I've done it for years, creating these buckets of things to do. The one that's in the book is exactly what I had on my desk when I was writing the book. So it says summer camp registration and everything. Again, there's no work you and personal you. There's just one brain. So it's one list and it's things that grouped based on what you need to do. So all the calls I need to make, all the physical errands I need to run, all the computer items that I need to do that are personal, all the work computer things, so that when it comes time and I'm at somewhere early and I can pull up my calls list and make all of those calls instead of it being all mixed together. And so you start with that, which is the top of the funnel. And then you move down to the daily list.
Laura, yes. I'm just going to interrupt you because I just threw this up on the screen.
Yes.
I hope it works as people can see it. So yep. This is from Laura's book. And I thought it was really helpful to see how you divide the main list up by type. So you've got groupings of computer work, computer personal. You've got calls that you've got to make, call swim school to schedule makeup. So you've got things to do around the house, to buy an errand. So that's your group. Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, when we're making a main list, are you basically taking literally everything that needs to be done and just trying to categorize it?
Yes. So that it's out of my brain, because that's the biggest thing. Stress is something that's stuck in your brain. So when you put it on a piece of paper with a deadline, it gives your brain that relaxing piece. Even though you haven't done it, you get some relief that it's documented and you know when it needs to be done. And then from that main list, you're making a realistic weekly plan of what you can actually pull off that list. So maybe I have a ton of travel this week. Those things need to stay there unless I can actually do them this week. This is seconds of time, because you've made this one time. The biggest time commitment is this one time brain dump of a main list. But then from there, you're just pulling things off of it and saying, what do I need? Oh, this is due next week, so I need to do it this week. You're aware of deadlines. You're pulling it off and saying, when. Biggest productivity downfall, I would say, is things that you have to do with no plan of when to do them. That's what I run into all the time. So instead of saying, I need to return the bathing suit at the mall because it's expiring, when do I actually plan on doing that? Now I'm looking at my calendar. Okay, Friday afternoon, I'm planning on driving home from work and it's on the way home. I'm doing it then. So getting really into the nitty gritty, and you could even go just from the main list to a daily list. If you don't think of your weeks like this and you just want to pull items off every day, you can do that. But then you go down to the daily list, which is truly an hour by hour contract with yourself. It's saying, what am I doing tomorrow at 7, tomorrow at 8? And all kinds of studies show, whether it's to manage anxiety about a day, to get the most of your time, an hour by hour plan is just to get you to work out. Like all of these things, planning ahead of time, how you plan to spend each hour has immeasurable benefits. And so this is the way that you're saying, I said I'd do, it was on my list. But the best part is, let's say you put something on this list and you don't get to it. Again, things happen, 10 o'clock rolls around, you didn't get it done. It's still on your other list so that you don't forget it. You look at that and think, oh, I actually didn't do that on Wednesday, so I need to do it Thursday when I'm making my Thursday list. So it's a ironclad system. And I think the most important one that isn't exactly part of the funnel, but what feeds the funnel is your capture list. So again, all the ideas of these things I need to do about rescheduling swim class, that comes to me when I'm driving home from work, not when I'm sitting at my desk and can call swim class. So how do I get that out of my head into that list? And that's where the capture list comes in. I would say that's probably the most important. It's just one note, whether it's a phone note. I recommend something like Google Keep or Apple Notes, where you can speak to a device and say, hey, Google, add this to my capture list, which I probably do 15 to 20 times a day, whether I'm driving, whether I'm just coming out of the shower and thought of 15 things I need to do. But it's some way of capturing it. And then when I go to make my main list, I'm actually going to the capture list and saying, okay, let me get everything that came out of my brain that needs to be done. So it's all within the funnel somewhere. And I always give the example of, my son came a month early. And I was still writing this book, and I was super surprised because I wasn't planning on just dropping everything and having a baby at that point. But after he was born and I had my maternity leave, I just came back to my last main list. And I said, this is everything I didn't do with deadlines. It was so freeing. Of course, there had been the things that came in, but I had exactly the list of everything I had dropped the ball on because he came. And that was so helpful to pick up and start there. So it's just that constant way for your brain to know that everything you have to do is somewhere.
Laura, I'm going to start throwing this open to questions from everybody, because I think where you've taken us to is a great place of just capturing the chaos around you and starting to put it down in organized ways so that you can start to tackle it. And I'm sure that everyone has their own versions of problems here. Here's folks, everybody, if you want to ask a question and have me ask it, you just type it away. But also, if you want to just raise your hand and just ask Laura directly, then please do that. I'm going to start with Nathan, who had written something from back when we were talking about priorities, which is, can you offer some advice on how to identify your top three priorities? It's hard to just get down to three.
Yeah, I think it's really asking yourself, if I could only do three things right now, what would those three things be? That can sometimes be a good mindset of just, if I had to drop everything else, what are the things that really matter to me? I also recommend getting feedback from a manager, an investor, a spouse, anyone that's engaged in what your priorities are, because that's helpful to have that open communication where, okay, you think my priority should be this. Either I need to tell you it's not that and it's these other things, or I need to adjust my priorities to make sure it is. So I think asking yourself that question and then getting feedback from those around you is a good way to narrow down what those things are.
Brendan asked, how does Laura adapt her daily list when something unexpected happens?
Yeah, great question. Of course, first of all, in the book, as you mentioned, it talks about building in time for urgent. One really successful practice I've seen a lot of executives do is leave 1 to 2 every day for day of, which means urgent or something they thought of in the morning and they want to do. So it's crazy. This one executive, his team even knows 1 to 2 is his slot. So if something urgent comes up, they all shuffle their calendars because they know he'll meet with him at 1. And so they have a briefing to him by 12:30. And if nothing comes up, he does that as work time. So that can be helpful if you feel like a lot of urgent things are coming up.
Laura, can I just say, because like when you described that as like office hours for academics, and that's when it clicked for me, is you just build in this time where the chaos can happen, where people know they can get your attention for it.
Exactly. They know you're available. And for yourself too, if something comes up, you at least know I've got 1 p.m. always to do it. But then if it blows your daily list out, which some things can, the beauty of it is tomorrow when you're making your daily list, your weekly list is going to remind you that you had something you needed to do yesterday that didn't get done. So it's that constant shift. And of course, that happens to me every single day. There's something I said I was going to do and I didn't. Now I got to find time tomorrow. I got to make that trade-off. Sometimes I really try to keep Friday morning, which is one of my power hours I talk about in the books. Friday morning is like way better ROI time spent on work than a Wednesday from 3 to 5. So I really prioritize those Friday morning hours. And I know that they're there so that as things slip throughout the week, I just know that Friday morning, I'm going to have that time to catch all of those things. So again, that's building in another block where things can be caught. But that's a good question because it obviously happened. The plan never goes to plan, but if there is no plan, it won't even be close to plan. So that's why you make a daily list.
Rowie asks, or I'm just going to read Rowie's comment, which is, I have ADHD, Rowie writes. I've tried creating a capture list, but then Google Keep or Trello just becomes a sea of tasks and random notes. Do you have tips on keeping the list clean and organized? Otherwise, it becomes a shame list of things I never did. Rowie, I love the phrase shame list.
That's my brother also has ADHD, and I got his feedback on specifically this list chapter because I was like, is this realistic? And he said, I talk about opening loops means like that new idea, that thing you want to do. And I just have so many open loops. It's just, that's what stresses me out, is a million things I think I could do, I should do. And then it's really getting down. And so what he does that he told me really helps for him is he captures them all, because that's important. That's, again, telling your brain it's okay to stop thinking about this, or I've got this. They're all on one list. So I think that helps versus having 500 post-it notes, because now you have a million places that you need to check. So still keeps that capture list structure. But whereas maybe someone without ADHD can say everything I opened on a loop, I want to execute on, he's really specific about how much he's going to pull off his capture list onto his actual main list. So I think it's what you were talking about. He gets realistic real soon about, was this just a capture? And if so, that's okay. Maybe I put it on a someday maybe list that stays separate so that I know that it's there. I can go back to it, but I'm not overburdening with myself with every idea I've ever had and thought that I've ever had, and then trying to find that time to do it. So that was his feedback. And of course, it's different for everyone, but I think it can be helpful still to capture, but then to be strategic at that moment of what am I actually going to do?
Steven asked, do you believe that one system can work for almost anyone, or is your goal really to just help leaders create a system that works for them?
I truly believe, even with my email system, people say, oh, do you teach this differently for executives? No. If it's your first day as a young professional or you're a seasoned vet in the career world, I truly think there's only 3 things you can do with an email: respond, read, or revisit. Like there's just, so again, with this main list, no matter who you are, these are really the types of actions everyone has. And of course, there's some ground where maybe your job has both work computer and work errands or something like that. But I truly think that a system can work for everyone. And then if you have other people involved in the system, I would say that's where I help customize, where an executive has this list of priorities, and then they also have a chief of staff who's adding to them and deciding how to delegate. When there's multiple people involved, I think it can adapt. But I truly think that many of our brains work the same way. It's truly, if people have ideas in the shower, no matter what level you are, who you are, what type of business. So how do you get those ideas to your desk? Of course, there's customization, but the core of it, I think, can work for anyone.
Barcy and Lisa both asked in different versions of returning to saying no to things. Barcy wrote, how to say no to the, can I schedule a time to pick your brain? Which, by the way, I just really hate the phrase pick your brain. It's disgusting. I never use it. I often send a consulting package, but in honesty, these, oops, sorry, somebody wrote something and then it just jumped. These are non-ideal clients and I should say no outright, but not sure how to do this guilt-free. Lisa had brought up the vulnerability and the kind of inside look at like family dynamics that we had talked about and said, why am I afraid that vulnerability is going to get interpreted as complaining? How do I get over this? I think a lot of women go through this. I feel like I feel guilty bringing my family into my nose. What do you say to those kinds of concerns and discomfort about saying no?
Yeah, I think I'll answer the second one first, because I definitely believe that women, for some reason, have a harder time saying no, whatever that is, setting boundaries. And I think you have to find whatever works best for you, because like I said, some people think no is a complete sentence and that works for them. Didn't work for me. And I think for you, bringing your family into it works for you and helps people understand, but it might not feel right for some people. And I think that you finding that amount of vulnerability that feels right, but not like you're trying to play them, maybe is like the right way of putting it. And just saying, hey, whether it's my kids or not, it's as much as I would love to, or I would really love to do this, but it just doesn't fit into my current set of priorities. And even that is a way of saying, I would love to, and I wish I could, and I recognize the value of this conference you're asking me to attend to. And sometimes I even follow up after the conference that I didn't speak at and say, how did it go? That's unexpected, because I told them I wasn't going to speak there, but I snoozed the email and Gmail and follow back up. So again, that's vulnerability without playing too many cards. I would say you can strike that balance. But the first one I love, because the first question, because I think it's just such a good example of you should say no to that. And you see it and you're thinking, I definitely should say no to this. And so can you read the first part again? Because it was the exact example I wanted to.
Yeah, sure. It was how to say no to the, can I schedule time to pick your
brain? Yes, that was it. Yes. Okay. So in the book, I talk about if somebody asks you to borrow money, do you say, sure, here's my routing number. Just go on in, grab whatever you need. That's what you say when you say, throw time on my calendar to pick my brain. Okay. So you want to give out your time as if you're writing a check. So when someone says, can I pick your brain? Which I agree is just a weird phrase and I don't like it either. But if they say, I get those emails all the time, I'd love to have a coffee chat with you. I'd love to just hear about your journey. And so what I'll do in those situations is either say something like, oh, as much as I would love to talk to every person who wants to hear about my journey, I actually filmed a video about my journey. And if you want to watch that and send over any email questions you have, I'm happy to answer it. Or I say something like, oh, here's my very specific check. Every Friday from 12 to 1, I do a lunch. Every Friday once a month, I do a lunch and learn from 12 to 1. That's a career chat with me. And you can ask any questions. And if you want to watch the video and then come to that, I would love to talk to you. So now I've given a small piece. I've made that person feel like I'm willing to speak to them, but I've done it in such a controlled way of my time that it's a very specific check for a very specific amount. And so you just want to find that way of doing that for yourself, because throwing time in your, if someone said, can I have 30 minutes on Friday morning to coffee chat with you about your career? That would be the biggest waste of my Friday morning I can think of. And no, the answer is no, that's not benefiting the company. That's not benefiting me. You're probably not going to get my best time at that time. Here's your check. So you can think about it that way.
Two quick things to add to that. Number one is that while you were talking, I tried to find the etymology of the phrase, pick your brain. Unfortunately, we don't know for sure where it comes from, but the hypothesis is that in the 1800s, as doctors were studying the brain, that they would often use a pick to take a small amount of brain out to study, and that is probably where it comes from. So there you go.
It's even weirder than I thought then.
And the other thing was, it just, what you were talking about reminded me of something I did yesterday. Yesterday, I got a DM from somebody on Instagram who's followed my work. She subscribes to my newsletter and follows me on socials, and she like read my book. And I'm very sympathetic when somebody has spent like that much time with my work. But what she wanted was for me to be a guest on her very new podcast that hasn't even launched yet. And this is like not a good spend of time, because mm-hmm. that podcast is reaching nobody. It's brand new. Right. And I don't think I want to spend 30 or 60 minutes on that, because I'm just not going to reach anybody. And mm-hmm. I have to, but she had spent all this time, and she had sent me this nice voice memo, and I was standing there in the basement yesterday trying to figure out what to do. And then it occurred to me, you know what I should do is I should respond with a voice memo. Because if I respond with a voice memo and I thank her and she can hear the genuineness in my voice, and then I explain, I would love to do it, but the thing is, I'm really strapped for time. And so I always have to think about how is my time spent on like outcome, and new podcasts is just generally not a good spend of my time. I wish you the best. I want you to build this show and then come back to me when it's got a really established audience. And she was really grateful for that, because I think ultimately it was like, she would have liked the yes, but she mm-hmm. really definitely wanted to be heard, because she spent right. this much time with my stuff. And so she did that. So anyway, that's just...
That was great. Yeah, you could say even further, that's a no, but you could have said, and here's three tips that I've used to build my podcast.
Ooh.
And that's just giving her now maybe better than even having you as a guest. So
that's a good
great.
Point. Lisa had also asked, how much time do you spend each week for the lists and the day-to-day mm-hmm. breakdown? And how do you schedule in the master list planning once a month?
Yeah. So I basically keep these what I call points of control of my day and my week. So Sunday night is that point for me where I basically take everything that I've got on the capture list for the week, look at my main list, I add it in there. And if it's the first Sunday of the month, I rewrite it with everything that's crossed off, gone. But what does that take? 7 minutes to do that. And then I, again, make my weekly list. I would say it takes no more than 15 minutes a week. I think sometimes people think this is a lot of lists, this is a lot of writing. But what I say is about lists is, if you go to the grocery store and you take the time to write out a list of what you need to buy based on what you're going to cook by aisle, and you spend 5 minutes doing that, and then you go 25 minutes in the store because you made that list, or you make no list and you wander around for 40 minutes trying to remember what ingredients and where, oh, and I forgot this back at produce. So now you've actually saved 10 minutes by making a 5-minute list. So it's the upfront investment of a list pays off long term. And I'm doing that at the beginning of the week. Then making my weekly list maybe takes 2 minutes, looking at my schedule and the things I plan to do. And then each day, like when I close down for the day, that's another point of control for me. So I have my last meeting. If my last meeting ends at 5, I basically plan to be online till 5:15 to say, oh, these are the things I didn't get to. I'm going to bump them tomorrow, make my daily list. And by making a daily list the day before, your brain has a chance, like marinating steak you're going to cook tomorrow overnight, has a chance to really soak in. So I'm fully prepared for what's happening tomorrow and how I need to be prepared for it. P.S. I might start thinking of ideas if there's something on the list I need to do. That's taking, again, 5 to 10 minutes at the end of the day and setting me up for way more than 5 to 10 minutes of efficiency as the day goes on. So really small investment for overall flow.
Karina, with another question about no, maybe we should do a session on just saying no. Which is, how do you say no to your boss without sounding like you're negative and you don't want to do a project?
Yeah, that's a great question. So first of all, I like to tell people, if you want to set some boundaries at work, start the conversation by saying to your boss, what are some boundaries you have at work? Is there any time when I shouldn't be emailing you? And then they start thinking, oh, what are my boundaries? And then hopefully they are a decent person. They say, what are your boundaries? So start that conversation. But as far as saying no, I think that getting your manager involved is a good way of getting them to encourage you to say no to some things. Oh, hey, I have these five. No, no boss is mad when you're intentional about your time. That's what I think. Hey, I have these 5 commitments. I've added up and really one of them's got to go. What do you feel like is the best use of my time? Now they feel involved. Now they feel like, wow, now this is my decision to tell this person how they should be spending their time. And they've really added up how much time they're spending in meetings and commitments, and they want to do the right thing with their time. So I'm going to tell them where to say no. And so again, maybe that's what you were going to say no to anyway, but that would have thrown your boss off if you did it without their buy-in. And so make them part of the process of your priority setting and of your, what meetings should I go to? If I give you these 6 meetings, which one or two would you say that I don't really need to attend? So get them to feel invested in where you're saying no, because they want you to use your time best as well. So that's a trick I've found works.
I'm going to throw two other ones really quick at you. Trista asks, you mentioned a capture list. Is that for both to-dos and ideas, or should you be thinking about those separately?
I think of them the same because, again, they're all things that I want to capture. So sometimes when I capture something, it's, I need to buy that birthday gift for the party my kid's going to on Saturday. So that's a capture. But then it's also, I should think about emailing all the clients I work with that one sheeter about keyboard shortcuts, or I should make a one sheeter. That's a big picture idea, but it's still ultimately what is the next action from that idea, which is creating the one sheeter. And so that's what actually makes its way to my main list. So I think it's just breaking down what the idea is. What is the next step of the idea so that it makes its way into action? Because an idea is only an idea without something associated with it.
Brendan just gave you a good layup for promoting your book. So he writes, the book sounds excellent. In addition to time management, does it cover energy and attention management? Which I just thought was a good way to have you give us a little more about what's in the book, because we really only covered the first section of it.
Yeah, I was going to say we're in the nitty gritty, but it actually goes bigger into, like I mentioned, time management to me is a little bit of a buzzword because people want more time. They need more time. It's all about time. But what happens is when you get energy and focus in the right place, time just happens. It's the right amount of time. So let's say, again, I have a training that I need to build from scratch and it's an hour and a half, about an hour and a half of work. So I schedule 9 to 10:30. Actually, let's say that I've just told you those are my power hours. Those are the times I do my best work. Everyone has those 2 to 3 hours where they're most focused and strategic. Let's say instead I schedule 3:30 to 5. So now that's the wrong time. So it's the exact same time as 9 to 10:30, but I'm going to get wildly different results by doing it then. And I might probably not do it. I'm going to procrastinate at that point. Figuring out when you look at a task on your list, you want to think, when is the exact perfect time that I would want to do this? And that's when you should schedule the time to be doing it. Not just whenever your calendar falls and you have a few minutes, because that's not going to produce your best results. But then let's say I do schedule 9 to 10:30, so I'm in the right energy to build a new training. So it's 9:04 and I finally sit down at my desk and then I have to finish this one email. So now it's 9:09 and then I see another tab that I meant to finish before I start that. And now it's 9:17 and then I go back to the presentation. I do a couple things. I get a chat. I do that real quick. A text comes in. I find myself, how am I now on social media? I meant to do this. Now it's 9:47. And then, oh my gosh, it's already 10:15 and I've barely done anything, but I can't really get started now because I have a meeting in 15 minutes. So what happened there is the time was there. This is not time management. We made the time, but the energy was there and the attention was not. And so when you have those blocks of time, when you're planning to work and you've slotted them at your best time to do work, you want to treat yourself like a child. Sit down 10 minutes before that block, 8:50, and think, all right, what is Laura going to get into? What is she going to do? I'm going to put her phone across the room. I'm going to close the email tab. I'm going to put on do not disturb. I'm going to finish this thing that she's working on. I'm going to get water and a snack so she cannot stand up and go anywhere. And now when I sit down at 9, there's just a blank presentation staring at me. And that, and I bored myself into having to do it. And then what's funny is it takes 30 minutes then. And now the time, I actually gain time back. And so really you want to think about using the time in the best way with focus and then putting it at the right time of the day. And then all of a sudden you have so much time. You're not strapped for time anymore. And so the book goes so much into that. It goes into email management. And then the piece we talked about with downtime and well-being and how that feeds into it.
All right. And then after that, we took a few more questions and then we parted ways so everyone could go back to their uptimes and their downtimes. Thank you so much to Laura May Martin for spending the time with us. Her book is called Uptime. Strongly recommend it. If you're interested in the community that I host that this conversation took part in, again, you can find that and my newsletter at onethingbetter.email. Again, onethingbetter.email. It's a web address. When you sign up for the newsletter, you'll get a welcome email, and that will contain information for how to actually explore the community itself. So with that, go get uptime. Go make more of your time. Thanks for spending some of your uptime and maybe downtime. I don't know. Anyway, with me. And that's our episode. I would love to hear what you think, and maybe even about a problem that you solved. You can find me at my website, jasonfeifer.com. JasonFeifer.com. Also, I have some more useful stuff for you. I write a newsletter about how to future-proof yourself and become more adaptable and optimistic. I would love for you to sign up. It is at jasonfeifer.bulletin.com. Also, check out my other podcast. It's called Build for Tomorrow. In each episode, I take on some belief that we have that holds us back from progress and show you why it is not as bad as you think. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media and comes out every Monday morning, so make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. Thanks to Deepa Shah for production. My name is Jason Pfeiffer. See you next week.